You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
It's Overdrive on TSN 1050, 5 o'clock in Toronto. Gord Miller here with Steve Simmons and Kelsey Braid, the anchor of SportsCenter tonight, is joining us. Multitasking.
Doing my best.
Is the show in the slow week? Is the show in the can?
Yes. There was talk yesterday that I might be able to come on yesterday, but during the 5 o'clock hour yesterday, there was stuff happening, pre-tapes, everything like that. But by 3 o'clock today, we're like, okay, I think we can make today work. So
there are 2 days in the sports calendar.
Yeah.
2 days in the calendar when Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, and NHL aren't playing. Monday and today. The day before, the day after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. But there's lots going on.
Thank goodness for the ESPYs.
So tell me about the Kawhi Leonard contract news.
Yeah, that kind of came out of left field, I think, for everyone who's seen the details of that. When it was reported on early Saturday morning around 2 a.m., the news breaking that he was going to be signing a four-year max with the Clippers, everyone's like, that makes complete and perfect sense. And then we find out today when it's officially signed that it's 2 years plus an option. So when it's all said and done.
A player option.
Yeah. Which is what the NBA is all about. 3 years, $103 million, which is a lot less than what everyone was expecting with the four-year max deal that he was going to get with the Clippers. And it presents so many interesting variables as to what the heck were the Clippers doing with that trade for Paul George, mortgaging like their entire future on hoping now that this two-year test run works out perfectly.
I don't understand the Clippers side of this right now. If they had Kawhi for longer, I'd understand that. If you have them, they gave up so much for Paul George that they're in a situation where they can't recover in terms of draft picks and that for years and years and years.
It doesn't matter.
Well, it doesn't matter for 2 years, but what if after 2 years Kawhi says, you know what? I don't like it here. I'm going somewhere else.
If he accomplishes exactly what he did this past year in Toronto? Yeah. Then see you later.
But if he doesn't, and it's going to be harder in the West.
It's going to be.
If he doesn't, then the whole notion of putting all your money into this guy for short term, if I was signing him, I would have gone longer, not at all.
But you know what? Here's the thing about the Clippers. And if you look at sports in North America, the Clippers versus the Lakers, the Islanders versus the Rangers, the Mets versus the Yankees, they're always the second team. The Clippers have always... Now, the Clippers haven't won, and there's all that. But I think they've got to put all their chips in. They've got to go all in.
Well, they're going all in.
They have to. Yeah. You can't sit there and be the second fiddle in your market forever. And look, even if the Clippers, you know, the other day we had NBA and Sarah on saying that if the Clippers win the NBA championship, they're still 14 behind the Lakers. I get that. But you've got to plant the flag in the ground at some point.
And they have been named the worst franchise in professional sport before Ballmer bought them. But the fascinating thing to me is, New York and L.A. have always held this allure of sorts as NBA markets. You know, the Mecca in Madison Square Garden and the Lakers winning all those titles and all those amazing players. Now it's the Nets and the Clippers who look to be, although
nearly New York and almost the Lakers.
Exactly.
But same building in Los Angeles. But how do you do it? Is LeBron better than Kawhi or Kawhi better than LeBron right now if LeBron comes back and plays this game? Is Anthony Davis better than George or George better than Anthony Davis?
And those aren't even, in my opinion, the two best teams right now in the West. Like, you look at Utah, you look at Denver, they've set themselves up very well.
Yeah.
And who knows what OKC does with Russell Westbrook, where he ends up going. Like, one guy in our newsroom today suggested maybe he goes to Houston just to see what kind of tire fire that creates in Houston. But the strange thing about all this is after 2021, like this year was a super year when it came to free agency. You had KD, Kyrie in the end, Kawhi. But it sets up after this 2 year, if he declines that player option, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo are all of a sudden up for grabs in 2021.
And what happens this Raptor season? Kyle Lowry's contract expires. Yeah. Serge Ibaka's contract expires. Marc Gasol's contract expires. There's about $80 million right there in those three deals that you can use to buy people.
You can use to buy people, but will the people come?
Well,
that's always been a thing, right?
So here's the other element of this equation is the Raptors, as you talked about. And Masai Ujiri was overseas, attending to a personal matter, but arrived in Vegas yesterday for the Summer League and had these comments to make, his first, about Kawhi leaving.
I was confident, but I understand how free agency is too, and you base things on some of the things that we've done, and you're biased a little bit. We won the championship, it went well, blah, blah, blah. But I know I'm not naive to think that in free agency it doesn't change.
I think, you know, a pretty pragmatic approach. He understands. But, I mean, I think that, you know, the Raptors aren't going to curl up in a ball here and, you know, and cry their eyes out all year. They're going to keep trying to win. And the one thing we know about Masai Ujiri is he's going to make moves to try to win.
And when you look at the start of this past season, they went all in. There was zero guarantees that Kawhi was going to stay. He didn't end up staying. But that didn't stop Masai Ujiri from even adding at the deadline to try and bring a championship to Toronto. It's going to be a lot harder now through free agency once all these contracts expire. It almost seems like for whatever Masai has to do, it has to be done during the trade. And now it's about stocking the cupboards again.
We were talking about a statue at the Scotiabank Arena or something inside or retiring a number. In my view, you want to put up a statue?
Masai.
Put up a statue of Masai.
Yeah.
Because he's the guy who boldly went out and knew it was a one-year gamble of sorts for the most part and got Kawhi Leonard. And got this guy nobody paid a second of attention to at the time in Danny Green.
And then
he at trade deadline had his mind fixated on one player who wound up signing in Milwaukee. And he didn't get him. Yeah. So he went and at one time was looking at getting Conley and Gasol and wound up just getting Gasol. I don't believe they win the NBA championship without the three players that Masai brought in this year, all of whom at different times, you know, obviously Kawhi being who he is, but Marc Gasol was enormous at different times in the playoffs, and those guys to me were the glue people on that championship team, all brought here by Masai in one year to accomplish what he set out to accomplish, which was to win. And how often does someone make those moves to win, and rarely does it happen?
The statue comment is interesting because I hate that we're at that point in the world right now where we have to like accommodate people. Like, why does Kawhi need a jersey? Why does Kawhi need a statue? You're absolutely right.
If
about
you ask
Masai,
Kawhi, by the way, Kawhi couldn't care less.
No, exactly. Yeah. But why is KD in Golden State and Oakland and now San Fran when they move there this year? Is he going when he's going to have his jersey retired? Like, I understand he had an impact on that team. But they had already won before he came there. Like, it's the players before him that laid the groundwork for this to get done. In Toronto, it's Masai Ujiri who laid the groundwork for this championship team to happen.
But Kawhi made the shot, and it's one of the greatest it's one of the greatest moments in Toronto sports history. It's one of the greatest moments in NBA history.
I mean, and we'll find out tonight with the ESPYs. Yeah, it's an award show that's made up to fill space at a certain time of the year when it comes to honoring that. But it could very well win best play tonight. And that could be the last piece of hardware that Kawhi takes with him.
And there'll be nobody to go up and accept it. So they'll probably play that aha, aha, aha.
The laugh. So
aha, aha, aha.
The last laugh.
And I love Matt Devlin. What is it? What a do, baby, or whatever he said afterwards. Yeah. That was one of my favorite parts of the parade.
Also on the show today.
Yeah.
A little bit of tennis.
Yeah.
So I hope that sports fans bask in the glory. Who knows how much longer this is going to last? But between them, Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic have won the last 10 majors in tennis.
And when you look at Wimbledon specifically, they've won 14 of the last 16 majors at Wimbledon.
So we have Nadal, Federer. Yeah. And Djokovic in the semifinals, along with Juan Bautista Agut, who prior to this year's his best performance prior to Wimbledon was making the quarters at the Australian Open this year. He's a 31-year-old clay court specialist who has
Big plans this weekend.
What's that story?
He's getting married, and he was supposed to be meeting up with like his groomsmen and friends for a bachelor party.
They're having a bachelor party without him. Basically,
well,
it works
they're
now.
Apparently coming to London now. Yeah. Which would be phenomenal. So they're going to hop on a plane, fly to England to watch him in the semifinals on Friday against Novak Djokovic. But you look at the big three. There will be greatness again in tennis, but I don't think there will ever be greatness where three. And even adding Andy Murray to that equation as a big four, there will never be that much dominance again.
You know, the one thing that comes to you over time is context. And I don't believe in our lives there has ever been anything like this in any sport. No. And I think that we have been so fortunate to live through this era of tennis, which every year I say, this is the last one.
Yeah.
You can't do it anymore. Federer can't keep doing this. Nadal can't keep doing it. Guess what? They're still doing it. And for as long as it lasts, we should be sitting back and saying, let's appreciate it, let's enjoy it. Because, you know, the minute that Kai Nishikori is playing somebody for the finals at Wimbledon, you're going to be turning channels.
Well, you saw the dip, and there was a few Americans who stepped up when Serena was absent for when she had her baby. But you saw the dip there even in the women's game. Like, Serena's almost back. I should say, she'll never be back to where she was before giving birth, but she is so close to winning another major, the record equaling 24th. But what she has done post motherhood is just phenomenal,
right?
And it's absolutely phenomenal.
And to me, what you really see is the depth of having the three guys compared to having the one woman. Because if she's not there, or if she's not playing at her best, it's always a different winner. Somebody wins the Open. Somebody then wins Wimbledon. Somebody then wins the French. It's rarely ever the same person.
In a magazine article this week, she talks about, you know, getting disqualified from the U.S. Open last year, and it remains outspoken and unapologetic. What's interesting about Serena and Andy Murray playing together in the mixed doubles is that at times, and not by everyone, but at times, they were difficult to like.
Yeah.
Right? And Andy Murray was a bit of a whiner and...
always yelling at his box.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. And Serena,
random thing.
And Serena's had numerous run-ins. But here they are now as elder statesmen.
Mm-hmm.
Elder statespeople. And it is something to see, right?
They're now beloved.
I don't think there is a better athlete in my lifetime that I can point to than Serena Williams.
100%
to me, I'm talking every sport and everything.
Yeah.
I just think she's the most incredible athlete I have ever seen.
Well, she brought an element to... She's the Bobby Orr, if you want to say that, of tennis. She brought an element to her game that no one had ever seen before. I mean, her power.
Power.
Yeah. Her power. Her raw... I mean, Orr...
She looks like she could play tight end in the NFL.
Like, I mean, Orr skating. Like Bobby Orr skating. Talk to guys that played against him. I mean, his skating was not next level. It was two levels beyond everyone else. And she brings that. But I do think that... I think the greatest thing about men's tennis for the last 15 years is that Djokovic really struggles against Nadal.
Yeah.
Nadal struggled against Federer for a long time, and Federer struggled against Djokovic. Like, there's this sort of triangle of... Now, the amazing story is Nadal's Uncle Tony, who I think in 2009 sat down and watched every match that Roger Federer had played for 5 years. He broke down every single match.
Wow.
And Federer has that great backhand. And the book on it was, you got to pound hard topspin to his back end. Uncle Tony discovered that's what he wants. What he doesn't like is a high bouncer to his back end.
Mm.
Nadal started doing that.
And that leveled the field.
And Nadal all of a sudden clobbers Federer in like six straight majors.
Well, let's see what happens now.
So,
is it tomorrow?
Friday?
Yeah.
Friday.
Here's the thing. They've never met at the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Federer and Nadal have never played each other at the U.S. Open.
Well, wasn't it like that with Borg and McEnroe as well? Well, Borg never seemed to have great U.S. Opens, but he always was superb at Wimbledon.
Yeah, for whatever reason, when they just never seemed to collide. So I think it's a great story.
Fantastic.
I hope that if you're a sports fan, that you can sit back and really and get a chance to say, I don't know how much longer this is going to be around, but this has been great.
And afterwards, what an opportunity for Felix, the young Canadian, Denis Shapovalov, if he can find his game again, or maybe if Milos Raonic could ever stay healthy. There's an opportunity there for somebody to win some majors. It's going to come in, you know, 5 years from now or 4 years from now, whenever it's the end of the three of them.
And one thing, when you look at Roger, and back to your point about the Rafa and the Novak part, was prior to this tournament, he was asked about the big three and the accomplishments that they've had. And he's like, we found early on that the three of us push each other to greatness. Because before that, it was like Pete Sampras standing alone on a mountain with the Grand Slam titles. And now all three of them are right there and beyond them. Like, it's phenomenal what he has done to change the game. And like Serena, and there's a common theme amongst all these guys, I don't think any of them care for the spotlight outside of tennis. They're fine on the court, but they could care less outside of the game about being in your face with different things. Like, sure, they're in commercials and stuff like that.
I look at Serena a little differently.
But
to her, I'm a bit sort of mesmerized by my inability to sort of figure out what she is. Because she doesn't want publicity and doesn't want this. And she does a reality show.
Right.
So she's doing a reality show and being a mother.
Yeah.
But But she doesn't want publicity, so you can't be both.
I think
she's a contradiction to me.
Dictated on her own terms. She wants to do what she wants, not what other people want her to do. And that
she was historically the one who would sign up for the Rogers Cup in Toronto, and then the week before would withdraw.
Sell tickets, then withdraw.
The one I like is, and I'm a tennis fan. I go to the U.S. Open. I'm the Australian Open away from the fan Grand Slam. I'm not the only one I haven't been to, but Roger Federer intrigues me because there's a bit of the King Roger to him.
Yeah.
When you listen to Roger Federer's post-match interviews, if he's lost, he almost never says his opponent played well.
No.
He'll say, I didn't have my best. Like he'll very rarely say, he just beat me today. And also, there's a little bit also of the Federer's fine with you as long as you treat him like the king. So when Djokovic did that thing at the U.S. Open at night, where he imitated guys and imitated Federer, Federer didn't like it.
No.
Djokovic is funny, by the way.
Very funny. And Federer made it very clear he didn't like that because King Roger. But that I admire that.
I like both sides of that, to be honest. I admire what Federer does. I think Federer is like the athlete of our lives.
Who else could show up at center court wearing a white warm-up jacket with his initials in gold lettering? Like, who else could do that? Muhammad Ali could do that.
Yeah.
I want to touch quickly on something else that's happening today, and it was the parade for the U.S. women's soccer team down the Canyon of Heroes in New York today.
Was Donald Trump there?
No.
See, that's not nice.
Why did you have to go there?
We're going to get there in a second, but the Canyon of Heroes has become kind of a, you know, it used to be very common. Like John Glenn, the astronaut, had a parade down there. All kinds of celebrities did, and of course, winning sports teams. But Megan Rapinoe had some pretty pointed comments today. I think this is a watershed moment for women's soccer, not just in the United States, but worldwide. I think the Women's World Cup is at a point where it can stand on its own. The question is, could a women's pro league? And that's the issue.
And we've seen the NWSL, which is the American League. Most of our Canadian players play down there, Christine Sinclair in Portland, amongst others. And it has to take that step. Like, the grassroots have been laid long enough for it to finally grab hold and actually generate. But until it does, this conversation is going to happen, unfortunately, every 4 years. But one of these times, when it is the end of that fourth year, the end of that World Cup cycle, it is going to grab hold, especially in North America. We've seen the European game on the women's side start to grow. Jordan Heidema, who's the Canadian player who went and signed over for PSG. Like, you see it growing in Europe. And it's just so disappointing, the fact that the U.S. women have been so dominant for so long, that we're not seeing it grab hold.
It's a different situation, but it's kind of the same story in hockey. And how now that we have all this confusion over where is women's hockey going? Do they have a pro league? What's it going to be? Who's going to play in it? Who's going to pay for it? Are people going to go and watch?
The difference, though, is there's been 8 women's World Cups. The United States has won 4 of them, but 4 different countries have won it.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, in hockey, it's a 2-country game.
So this is... Now, the United States, with its economic muscle, with, you know, obviously the training that athletes get at younger ages, with the facilities they have, they're going to have an edge. But it is a world sport, and you can see that it's grown to that level. I guess the question is, you know, the WNBA, by most accounts, is subsidized by NBA teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen the issue with the Women's Hockey League. We've seen Canadian players, as you talked about, you know, go support women's sports. And the best example I can give you is Katrina Lemay-Doan, won 2 gold medals in Salt Lake City. The numbers, the ratings for those 2 races were off the charts. Less than a month...
Might have been the columns that were written about it.
Probably.
Yes.
A lot of people mentioned that.
Self-pat back.
less than a month later, the same distances against the same field at the Olympic Oval in Calgary, 100 people.
Yeah.
Like, how do we take that and take it to the next level?
The World Juniors in hockey, one of your favorite things, becomes a huge thing in this country.
Yeah.
And then the championship is won, and all the guys scatter to their teams. And I went to Brampton to watch Cody Hodgson and Duchesne play for Brampton after the World Juniors.
In 2009.
Place was completely empty. Yeah. It was like they won, the country went nuts, 2 days later, it's back to normal.
And there's markets in Ontario and across Canada where those local teams are supported year-round. But then there's markets where you expect after, like you said.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was the first game.
This is a must grab ticket. Yeah. And yet there's nothing. It's like, and the other thing I would say to that with the U.S. Women's National Team is like Major League Soccer, like that's one of the sports I cover for TSN. It still hasn't even grabbed hold in the United States. And it's such a regionalized sport, right. Much like how hockey
is. Tennis, though, the only women's sport that does well around the world and internationally per se?
But does it only do well around the world in the North American context because of Serena Williams? Because when you look at men's tennis, it's doing well in Europe, really well in Europe. And then once Roger, Rafa, and Novak get to the very end, then it does really well in North America because those are the big names. But there hasn't been a big American tennis star that's done anything.
The last American
since,
to win a grand,
since Roddick,
the last
right?
American man
Roddick.
To win a Grand Slam was Roddick in 03. I would say this. There are some exceptions. I would say women's gymnastics at the Olympics is
huge.
Bigger than men's.
Lots of things are big at the Olympics that aren't big
I would say this. Now, track and field is not an enormous sport in North America, but in Europe, Asia, Africa, women's track and field is enormous. Mm-hmm. Now, you can say, well, we don't watch it here, but we're a small part of the world. The Diamond League, the year-round track and field competition.
I know people.
Some of those athletes are enormous stars.
Friends of mine were track and field beat reporters in England, and they were upper echelon people at their newspapers. Like, that's how they were viewed. That's how big track and field is in Europe.
Dylan Armstrong from Kamloops, the big shot putter. Yeah. Had a chance to interview him several times. We went out for lunch one time just after one of his events and stuff like that. And he spoke about how in Europe, when at some events, people would be chanting his name when he was introduced. Whereas at the Harry Jerome Classic in Burnaby at Swangard Stadium, he'd walk out there, and again, like how you'd say, with the speed skating event, there'd be hundreds or 1,000 people there. And it's just, he is at the best at his sport, one of the very tops in the world, but yet, in his own country, he was an unknown, couldn't gain traction, but around the world, there were people chanting his name.
I did Usain Bolt's, all 9 of the gold medals, from some of the favorite things I've ever seen in my life, in those massive stadiums with hundreds of 100,000 people or something. He came to run in Toronto at Varsity Stadium not long after the Olympics. Yeah. Maybe there was 2,000 people there.
Yeah. Mm. It is a strange thing. I mean, you can talk about the power of the Olympics. But you can take sports that people literally will not go across the street to watch if it's not the Olympics, and they'll be packed for the...
My old boss, Scott Morrison, once said, when you're starting out in the business, you're covering high school track meets and rowing races and all these things. You can't wait to get a real team and a real pro sport to cover. And then you get the biggest assignment of your life. You're going to the Olympics. And what are you covering? Track and field and rowing. And
you know what? I did track and field in London in 2012. It was one of the greatest thrills of my career. It's hard, and it was fantastic.
It's an amazing sport.
Because it's not just one sport. Yeah. I mean... You know, Bob Beamon's jump happened during the 200 meters when, you know, the Americans finished 1-2 and the Black Power salute. I mean, it was all of that happened. Tommy Smith and Juan Carlos happened at the same time. I mean, I saw Great Britain win 3 gold medals in 35 minutes in London.
That was a special night.
It was extraordinary. But again, it's something that we have to try to make that translate. And I think that's the next step for women's soccer, right?
So,
oh, by the way, Megan Rapinoe will not be going to the White House.
No. She
made it quite clear
today. She's declined.
She said there's
rightfully so.
She said today...
Is the team going?
That's a great question. I can't imagine they go.
I would assume not. Like, they would be behind Rapinoe 100%.
Are the Raptors going to Parliament Hill, by the way? Is that happening?
I don't know. Good luck getting them.
Hey, Kawhi, can you come back Kawhi said, no, thank you.
Ottawa? No, don't think so.
Will he play in Vancouver, by the way? Because the Clippers have an exhibition game in Vancouver, and I suspect that's part of load management.
But isn't that where he started his Raptors career?
Yes.
Was last fall at training camp in Vancouver?
I think the Raptors are playing in Quebec City this year.
Yeah, they announced that today.
They're having camp there.
Yeah. All right, Kelsey, thanks for joining us. Have a great show on SportsCenter at 6
30 minutes. 30 minutes from now,
thanks for stopping with us, and we'll catch you later.
Thank you.
All right, there's Kelsey Braid. You're listening to Overtime on TSN 1050 on the TSN app and watching on TSN 4. TSN Overdrive. Gord Miller sitting in for Brian Hayes for a couple of weeks. Steve Simmons is with me at 6 o'clock. We're going to read mean tweets. You've started already. You're doing some.
I just happened to look for a second, and People don't like me.
You seem okay with it.
You know what? Every time, here's the thing. I'm going to go back to the Pan Am Games in Toronto because it was a really eye-opening experience for me because it was like 20 days of being at a different part of the city every single day at a different event.
Okay.
And every single day you ran into sports fans who recognized you.
Okay.
And I could not believe how nicely I was treated and how everyone said nothing but respectful things and everything along those lines.
No
and
questions.
I thought to myself, like, this goes counter to the social media world. And it was very nice for me to sort of see that there's a world outside of that.
And you know what? I think it goes back before social media. They always said you didn't want to hear a tape of what people said, what other drivers said about you. You would never want to hear that. Well, that's basically what social media is. You know, if you're in the public eye, you can hear what people say behind your back. But to your face, honestly, I've been on television forever. I can count on one hand the number of people who have been rude to me. Like, well,
publicly?
Yeah, like, yeah, to my face. Honestly, like, I've had, you know, a couple of drunks have come up and tried to start something. But for the most part, I mean, most people are very nice. And now I'm not as controversial as you are. I mean, you are. You're a fire.
See, I don't like the word controversy. I like the word honesty. Or I'm writing what I believe.
I'm far more dishonest than you are, Steve.
No, I don't mean that. If I see something and I don't like it, and I say, I'll use the parade as an example. The Raptors parade. I was very close to where the shooting took place.
Right.
And where we had to get under, they actually yelled for us to get down and underneath tables. And then they evacuated our area. So my view of the day, other than the fact it was 3 hours late and they didn't have anything prepared, and there was a lot of things that didn't work, suddenly people were running for their lives. That's a whole different thing. And I wrote that this wasn't the day anyone wanted. And a lot of people got mad at me for saying that, but what happened was, it was funny, the Toronto Star basically took the everything was fine approach, realized that everything wasn't fine, and the next couple of days came out with a whole bunch of articles saying everything wasn't fine.
So a friend of mine works with the city and made a comment to me that, you know, there weren't 2 million people there. And I said, well, I don't know how many people were there. I didn't count.
How could you count?
Well, there was a helicopter, and they do the same thing for Pride. They take a picture from a certain height with a grid, and they can estimate the crowd size for staffing. And I guess they did this because if the Leafs win, they'd want to know what kind of staffing they need. Apparently, now, to your point, I'm not going on the radio the next day, oh, there weren't 2 million people there. I mean, estimate 2 million, who cares, right? I mean, not a big deal to me. But I guess, to your point, in that euphoria, people don't want to hear that it was really lucky that thing didn't get out of control. It was really, I mean, for a number of reasons.
Look at it from your perspective personally. If upon hearing a gunshot, people started running in all directions and screaming, and it was your 8-year-old or 10-year-old daughter who got run over and trampled on, the only thing you're going to matter about that wasn't that there's 1 million or 2 million or 4 million people there. My daughter got trampled on.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a celebration.
It could have been.
And that's where I was coming from in the piece I wrote.
They were lucky. They were like, for a number of reasons, that didn't get worse. There were people passing kids over a fence to get treatment for heat stroke. There wasn't enough water. You can do that. So I guess you have to balance. People don't want to hear that.
No.
And so telling people, listen, I'll go back with you to something else. And in a minute, we're going to do our Gritty Awards. But when the pedophile scandal happened at Maple Leaf Gardens, people did not want to hear about it.
No.
They did not. And the journalists who wrote about it repeatedly and who followed that story and who broke new information were ignored because people didn't want to hear it.
No, and that people, again, you're intruding upon their sensibilities that way. And some people want to know everything that happened, and some people only want a closed version and a protected version.
But here's the thing, and you mentioned them earlier, the victims at Michigan State. How did that go on so long? How did Penn State go on so long?
How did Maple Leaf Gardens go on so long?
Because people looked the other way.
Yeah.
Because people deferred to big organizations and did not want to speak unpopular truths about popular people.
I wrote a book about something I'm pretty proud of, and it was really difficult to do. It was the Mike Danton story.
Yes, and it was a great book.
And one of the things that astounded me to this day, because we watched the playoffs and we're so into the playoffs, is Mike Denton is in the bathroom at the San Jose Arena between periods of a Stanley Cup playoff game, arranging a hit on the phone.
Yeah.
Just think of that in context of your favorite team and your favorite players. That is like almost impossible to fathom.
One of the strangest experiences of my life was walking. I was covering that series, was broadcasting that series, walking to the rink. Danton was right in front of us on the phone the whole way from the Fairmont in San Jose to the rink. And then that night, I heard sirens and saw flashing lights. He was arrested about 3 in the morning.
Yeah, at the airport.
Ryan Johnson was his roommate.
Yeah.
And incredible. But the one thing is, speaking unpopular truths is really important because it often saves people's lives. So with all that in mind, we kind of got off on a tangent there. Yes. Grappler, you're supposed to rein us in here. So here we go. The first ever Gritty. The ESPYs are tonight. So we had a number of candidates to name these awards. The Jerry's was a popular one. Because it's Overdrive.
Jerry's.
The Jerry. Part of it's Overdrive, so the ovaries, but that didn't go very far. So we're calling them the Gritties. So our first category. I like it. First category is Grappler.
The first category will be the best hair in Toronto sports. Best hair in Toronto sports. And the nominees for this year are Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Beau Bichette, Vlad Guerrero Jr., so a lot of Jays representation, and Mike Babcock. Where do you boys stand?
Mike Babcock. No one.
I can't even picture Mike Babcock's hair.
Oh, come on. The flow he has, no one spends more time on his flow than Mike Babcock.
I'm sorry. It might be, but he's not a Lourdes. I mean, I love Guerrero's hair, but Lourdes Gurriel Jr. wins for me. He's got it going on.
That is a sweet salad. There's no question. Yeah. I just think that Mike Babcock is a man in his 50s who spends a lot of time on his hair.
No, good for him that he has it.
There are very few of us in our 50s who can't. Now, I am fortunate, as I remind Ray Ferraro all the time, I have thick, luxurious hair. At least I like to think so.
Good for you, and I'm happy because I don't.
Not really true, because if you look from behind, not so much. All right, category number two.
We don't want to find out the winner.
Oh, who's the winner?
The winner is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Steve had it all along.
All right. I'm 0 for 1.
All right, moving on. Second category is best sporting moment of the year. So number one, Toronto Raptors winning an NBA title. Number two, Vlad Guerrero and his home run derby performance this past week. Number three, the St. Louis Blues winning a Stanley Cup despite being dead last in the NHL in January. And number four, Tom Brady winning his 6th Super Bowl this past February.
So my moment of the year isn't even on the...
What's your moment of the year?
It's the Kawhi jump shot at the end of the Philly game.
Wasn't that part of the Raptors winning?
Yeah, but it stood out because it was such a spectacular, odd play.
I'm going Raptors.
I think we all know what the winner is.
The
winner is the Toronto Raptors winning their first title in franchise history.
Although Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl is a pretty amazing. How about Tiger Woods winning the Masters?
Ooh, I forgot about Tiger. Oh, boy.
Grappler?
Someone dropped the ball there.
Yeah,
and even with Tom Brady winning a Super Bowl, that was a letdown of a game. I mean, who really enjoyed that 13-3 finish or whatever
the Tiger Woods winning the Masters is right up there. All right, category number three.
Category number three, and I'm going to have to give some context for each of these. Okay. So the category here is Best Overdrive Sound Bites of 2019. And so the first clip we're going to play here, it's from a couple weeks ago. O-Dog was in here with Hayes and Jonas Siegel was hosting. And we decided to kind of recapture some trivia, something that we'd done a little while ago with Mark Masters. And the question for O was, who was the first prime minister in Canada? And here's what he had to say.
This one you got to have. Who was the first prime minister of Canada?
Of Canada?
I might not know that either. Don't worry. Prime Minister of Canada. You guys can't be serious.
Dude, I like, don't think I'm an idiot, but the first guy I can think of is Mulroney.
Wrong.
I don't even know anybody before that.
Oh, man.
I thought you were an idiot.
I award you
that.
No points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Oh. So that was number one. Okay. Number two comes from the Raptors parade a couple Mondays ago. And obviously a big part of that was, the crowd, the lack of food. And the boys, during their coverage that day, decided to have a little conversation about, what might happen if someone had some internal issues through the course of that parade.
Could you imagine if you ate Taco Bell and you're in the middle of that group?
Oh, my God.
And you got to make a quick exit? Dude, that's not happening.
Can you imagine, like, an emergency exit? Like, they have to fly a helicopter in because some guy's boiler exploded right in the middle of the crowd.
They got to lower the guy down in the yellow stretcher
to pick him up.
Like, airlift him out.
Airlift him out. Like, he's at the top. Stretcher.
Like, he's at the top of Mount Everest. Yeah. He's going to bring him out.
Take him to a rooftop at the DoubleTree there so we can have a moose.
Yeah, so the boys had some fun down there. Okay. And number three is the day following the parade when O let us know that he was playing hero by bringing water to us.
I went above and beyond the call of duty. That's why. I have a 3-hour shift in my car. I'll get the Roger Dorn papers out for you. 3 hours every day, not 10, with sandwiches stuffed in a guy's underpants that tasted like garbage. And no water. I brought the water.
Well, there was water. There was.
No, I brought it.
Well, you brought your. Yeah.
You called me and said there's no water.
Yeah, the O dog was none too pleased that he had to bring water that day.
There was water. There was a cooler. They just didn't know where it was, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, no, we didn't know where it was. And then once we found out where it was almost completely empty. So, no, there wasn't much left for us. So the final clip we're going to play, anyone who listened to this show knows that Dwayne Casey loves Brian Hayes. And here's how some of that sounds.
Always great talking to you, my friend. And like I said, you represent the NBA as far as the sports media is concerned there in Toronto.
I appreciate it. Thanks, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Okay. Thank you, buddy.
There's Dwayne Casey.
So, there's our four clips. Which ones do you guys like?
Oh, I think the first one. Not knowing who Sir John A. Macdonald was is...
Where did O go to school? Like, grade 1 to 6 school.
Played junior in Guelph, I'm assuming he went to high school there.
I would think you start history pretty early in school, you know?
Yeah.
But Jonas didn't know either.
Jonas Siegel didn't know?
Yeah, he said something on that clip about... Like, that's disappointing.
That shocks me.
Yeah. So anyways, the winner is... bringing the water.
Really?
I think our Instagram followers had something to say about this one. When that got posted on our Instagram, it absolutely blew up. So they may have had some sort of influence in the voting this time around.
Now, I'm going to say this, Grappler, because it's 5:41. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break and finish this. How's that? That sound okay?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back with the best boiler in sports, the Toronto Athlete of the Year, the worst Twitter mentions, could be you, Steve, and the Hayes B Award for Excellence in the Field of Overdrive Interviews. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the TSN app and watching on TSN 4. It's the Gritties. Did we have seat fillers? My favorite part of the award shows that you don't know is when people go up to accept their award, then go backstage, they have someone come back.
Sit in the seats.
Yeah, they sit them there.
Isn't there a great Seinfeld episode?
Yes.
Kramer was a seat filler?
Yes, and he did it badly, not surprisingly. All right, it's the Gritties, the first annual. We've done the best hair in Toronto sports, the best sports moment of the year, the best Overdrive soundbite of the year. Time now for our final four categories. Starting with Grappler, what do we have next?
We've got the best boiler in sports. And for those who don't know what a boiler is, the best gut in sports.
All right.
So, the nominees for best boiler in sports are Bartolo Colon, former Packers running back Eddie Lacy, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and CC Sabathia. How do you guys feel there?
Bartolo Colon.
I'm the same way.
How can you not?
I love the nickname too. It's like the big sexy.
The big sexy. Yeah. Because he's just not.
And the fact he lasted as long as he did.
It was amazing. Didn't he homer last year?
Yeah. I'd rather see him do like an in the park homer. Just to watch him see.
Be a big park.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Bartolo Colon. Who's our winner?
And the winner is... Oh, look at that. Both on the same page. Bartolo Colon is the winner.
All right.
And honestly, like, to do with Bartolo Colon having inside the park home run, pace of play is already enough a problem in baseball. The game would last about 5-6 hours. There's no way baseball has time for Bartolo Colon to run the bases.
No. Okay, next category.
Next category is Toronto Athlete of the Year. Now, this is a mix of athletes both from the city of Toronto and the surrounding area and people who may have spent one season in the city of Toronto.
Who would that be?
I wonder. So the nominees are Kawhi Leonard, Mitchell Marner, Alex Petrangelo, and Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray, by the way, now the highest paid Canadian athlete ever.
Ever in any sport?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, in terms of salary. Yeah. Well, it's Kawhi.
It's Kawhi.
It is Kawhi, but you know, if you're voting on awards, he didn't play a lot of games during the regular season. I mean, he missed some games during the regular season. We're shortchanging Mitch Marner a little bit here. But yeah, it's Kawhi.
I'm not even sure Mitch Marner was the Leafs MVP. I think that...
Who was?
Maybe Morgan Riley, maybe Mitch. I think it changed, you know, depending on which month it was.
Mitch Marner was their best player from start to finish, wasn't he? Yeah. Either him or Freddie Anderson. And Anderson...
Year, for me, includes the playoffs and the season. Yes. And I thought he was just okay in the playoffs.
Right, so we're going Kawhi.
And the winner is... Oh, you got it again. Kawhi Leonard. Right. I don't think that's much of a surprise there. No. I mean, you know, played only 56 games in the regular season, but won an NBA title. I think that trumps Mitch Marner failing to get out of the first round.
Yeah. Next category.
Next category is, and this is a fun one, worst Twitter mentions.
Okay.
Ooh. And the nominees are Steve Simmons, our very own.
Nice.
Darren Dreger, who's taken a little bit of flack these last few weeks.
He's getting very unpopular, Dregs, all of a sudden.
Donald Trump. And then this last one, it sounds like our voters had a really hard time figuring out who this final nominee would be. It's a mix of Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, and Chris Broussard.
I would put also in there, who else belongs in that? Colin Coward.
Yeah. In that same group.
In that same group.
Yeah.
Worst, we're going to do mean tweets at the top of the hour. I'm going to say Steve Simmons.
Donald Trump.
Well, yeah.
He brings it on.
Yeah.
And how can you like him?
Good point. I'm going with you.
If you're both feeling Trump, okay.
I'm going with Steve Simmons.
Oh. The winner is... Oh, it's the combo of Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, and Chris Broussard.
Really? There you go.
They just... Those things took such a beating these last few weeks. It's, you know, you can't be too surprised at that result.
Okay, and our final category.
Our final category, and this is the first time we're doing this award. It is the Hazy B Award for Excellence in the Field of Overdrive Interviewing. And who's going to be receiving it this year? It's going to be Dwayne Casey for his continued love and support for the show and for its host, the one, the only, Brian Hayes. And we've put together a little montage to speak about their relationship.
How's it going, Dwayne?
Doing fine, Brian. How you doing, buddy?
We're doing well. I'm doing very good.
And I was pretty, you know, pretty adamant about it after the game was over with Brian. But so we want to make sure we stay sharp, Brian. And one thing that has allowed that, Brian, is, well, one thing with OG Brian is, you know, I always said this, Brian. I tell you what, I got to be Hayes. I got to hook you guys up. I totally just slipped my mind off. All right, guys. You represent the NBA, as far as the sports media is concerned, they're in Toronto.
Wow.
I think when Dwayne did his media training many years ago, one of the things they told him was always use the name of the person you're talking
Except he didn't do it with other people. I don't
know. Oh, yeah. In his daily scrums, if I asked a question, it was Steve. If you asked a question, it was Gord.
Nick Nurse.
Nick has picked up on that. He does the same thing.
With you.
Yeah,
I was watching the post interviews from the NBA Finals. He with you mostly.
Most of the locals, though, he's pretty much. Doug Smith, it's always Doug.
You is always Steve.
He looks up to me age-wise, that's why.
I don't know about that. It is funny, though, like that certain, I mean, obviously there's chemistry there with Hayes and Dwayne Casey, and then sometimes there's just no chemistry. Yeah. And you can just, now who was it for you?
John Ferguson Jr., probably the worst relationship I think I've ever had with a coach or GM or player.
Really?
When he ran the Leafs into the ground.
Well, maybe because he just said things like that.
May have been that.
That might have had something to do with it.
That Andrew Raycroft trade. How's that worked out?
Glenn Sather and I had some tough moments.
Oh, I had some really bad moments.
Yeah, I had some tough. The funny thing was, covering the Battle of Alberta in the 80s, I actually preferred the Flames. They treated us way better than the their management and coaches treated us way better. Like Cliff Fletcher, Badger Bob Johnson, Terry Crisp, Al Coates, they were way friendlier to us. And you don't have to be friendly with the media, but way more respectful. I mean, Glenn Sather used to wipe his shoes on us every day.
And I was his favorite from the out-of-town crowd, so he was all over me all the time. Badger Bob Johnson, the late Bob Johnson, one of the finest people I have known in the career, one of the finest people I've ever come across, and I miss him every single day he's been gone.
Yeah, he was an amazing man, and he, the most positive post-game speech to a team I've ever heard, the Flames in 86, the year they went to the final, lost 10 games in a row. And the 10th loss was on home ice. I think they lost 8-1 to Hartford. And he said, I know we just got beat 8-1. I know we've lost 10 in a row. But that power play goals we scored, one of the best goals I've ever seen.
And on the same night, he got mad at – and Bob never got mad at anyone. But he got mad at Kent Nilsson because Kent Nilsson didn't chase down a player during a play. And after the game, he went off on Kent Nilsson did this and Kent Nilsson did that. So we have to go, of course, to Kent Nilsson and ask him what he thought. And he didn't chase somebody on a goal. And Kent Nilsson's answer was 6-1, 7-1. What's the difference?
Overdrive coming up. Mean tweets at the top of the hour.